Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Well, welcome to our second hour on Circles of Change and a fun segment we're about to do with, I'll call it Talking About Talk Radio on Talk Radio with a fellow colleague in the media, Dr. Paul Christo. How are you this morning, Paul?
Just fine.
Just
How are
great.
You?
Terrific. Well, Paul is one of America's leading experts on relieving acute and chronic pain. He's a board-certified Harvard-trained anesthesiologist and a Johns Hopkins-trained pain medicine specialist. And Paul has directed medical training programs and led the Johns Hopkins Hospital Pain Treatment Center for a combined 13 years now. U.S. News and World Report lists him as one of the top doctors among the top 1% in the nation in the field of pain management. Paul lectures internationally, serves on editorial boards, teaches. He's co-edited three textbooks on pain and has published over 60 articles and book chapters on many topics related indeed to pain treatment. He's one of six experts, in fact, from the U.S. and Canada who recently participated in a fellowship program focused on media and policymaking. A native of San Francisco, living coast to coast in the meantime, he's a graduate of the University of Notre Dame and the University of Louisville School of Medicine. Paul also earned an MBA in healthcare management. He's been a guest on NPR, Good Morning America Health, Retirement Living Television's Life Healthline, and also contributes to web chat series hosted by the Tribune Newspapers and the Baltimore Sun. As I said, he also hosts a special radio show segment every weekend in the Washington, D.C. area called Aches and Gains. So it's always a pleasure to host someone else who's trying out this media stuff in the mix of what we do professionally. Right, Paul?
That's right.
Very
Thank
good.
You.
So how is it that you came in your field of study in medicine to focus on the topic of pain?
Well, I think that it probably started when I was an intern in internal medicine and realized that there were a lot of patients that I saw during that year as an internist, if you will, who suffer from pain, and I felt like I just did not have the adequate skills to treat them properly. And eventually, I decided then to go into anesthesiology, train in anesthesiology, and learned how to control pain very mm-hmm. acutely. That is, obviously, during procedures, during surgery. And then at that time, I realized, you know, it's wonderful to be able to control someone's pain that acutely, but what about the millions of people who suffer from chronic pain yeah. whom I really don't get to see? And at that point, I felt that I wanted additional training that would give me the skill set and the understanding to help treat those, gosh, over 100 million or so people now in this country who suffer from uncontrolled pain.
Well, and for one who has dealt with chronic lower back pain for years, bravo for you. It's something that I can recall my own journey of going probably in 10 or 15 different directions trying to resolve it, and lo and behold, ended up finding a naturopathic approach in yoga. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure your field thus, it is a more integrative medicine, isn't it, Paul?
It can be. Mm-hmm. I think that we're learning more and more about the value of integrative medicine. That is, things like acupuncture and even physical therapy and spiritual techniques, mind-body techniques
right.
that can help very much relieve pain, reduce pain, and help change perspective on having chronic pain.
Yeah, because some people just came to say, well, it's just part of life, and never even dawned on them they probably could go after it. Well, you know, is pain really the problem, though, that you set off to resolve with people? Is there not usually something more, you know, insidious or difficult underlying that pain?
You know, there can be, especially if I'm seeing patients with cancer pain. I mean, in that circumstance, certainly there is something deeper and more serious that often, you know, may lead to their death. However, many of the patients who suffer from pain that I see don't have cancer pain. And, you know, in many circumstances, there isn't something life-threatening that's causing their pain. At the same time, though, the life-changing events that occur from having chronic pain can be enormous. I mean, that's what sort of amazed me over time, and that, gosh, if someone has, for example, chronic pain in the right toe due to maybe surgery, I mean, how their whole life, the way they move their body, the way they move their leg, or the the way they in the past were able to play tennis, they can no longer do because the pain is so intense and it causes such an event in their life that moves them away from some of the activities that they once could do.
And so you'd probably say, really, this is not just resolving that medical issue, but recognizing, you know, if pain goes untreated, what else it does to someone's life, right?
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think that's what isn't as recognized with respect to chronic pain is the psychological impact that it has on people, on human beings, and that it can, you know, when the pain persists beyond, you know, 3 months or 6 months or into years, it really does take its toll. And what I mean by that is it leads often to depression and to anxiety. I mean, you know, many patients feel afraid of using a particular part of their body because when they move it or use it in ways that they once did, it hurts, you know, a lot. So, you know, that leads to fear avoidance. And then, you know, all of this actually can lead to disability and a retraction from life. And that's really the sadness that I see. You know, when I've seen patients who really haven't been treated for their pain for, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
But, Paul, as you work with your different clients, perhaps you can share a couple, you know, stories of the journey you've gone through with a patient so our listeners can understand. You know, as we always say on this show, particularly when it comes to personal change, that we have to focus on the F's to get an A. And by that, I mean your faith, family, fun, food, fitness, you know, and focus on others. So these things are all interwoven, I'm sure, as you work with clients. So an instance of where you've watched someone kind of wake up from this fear, and then how it is what you do to help them go through those next steps.
Sure. So I've treated a patient, for example, who has a pain disease process called complex regional pain syndrome. It was formerly known as reflex sympathetic dystrophy, or RSD. And it's something that results from, gosh, it could be a minor trauma. In this case, it was a woman who had a simple surgery to her right toe. Well, the pain developed to the extent that she not only felt the pain in her right toe, but all the way up to her hip.
Oh,
her skin changed. Skin color changed. It was red. You couldn't even touch it with your finger. It hurt so much. So she could barely tolerate wearing pants, for example. It sweat strangely at times. And then she stopped using that leg. So she was using crutches to walk around for years. What I did at that time was use a couple of different medicines to help treat pain, try a couple of nerve blocks, and then finally what I ended up doing is using a device that's called a spinal cord stimulator. And this is something that's sort of like a pain pacemaker, but for the spinal cord. A little wire is placed around the spinal cord, and it stimulates the cord in small little micro doses of electricity to help reduce pain. It's pretty amazing. So in combination with the medicines and some of the nerve blocks and this thing called spinal cord stimulation, she really regained most of her life. Not 100% of her life, but at least she could return to work. She resumed normal activities with her husband and with her kids. I mean, she was an avid I think tennis player, actually. So she couldn't return to, you know, playing tennis, but she could do things like swim or even take walks, which she hadn't done in 10 years.
So this multiple approach that you took from, you know, the pharmacological approach with drugs, but then nerve blocks, and then the use of some new modern technology, that's what that stimulator is all about?
That's right. That's right.
Have there been a lot of advances in that part to assist you doctors in this particular field of pain management?
Well, we've learned more about some of the mechanisms behind the development of chronic pain, and we have medicines that now target some of those disease processes in the brain and the spinal cord. They're not as specific as we'd like them to be. Nevertheless, there are medications that can be quite useful in reducing pain. And when it comes to nerve blocks, there are several nerve blocks that can be helpful to reduce pain. And then, as you mentioned, spinal cord stimulation is rather new. I mean, actually, it was developed back in the 1960s, 1967, it was first used by a neurosurgeon to help reduce cancer pain. But over time, the technology has developed such that these devices are extremely helpful for reducing pain, helping control pain in certain areas of the body. And, you know, in time, I think we're going to develop even more intriguing therapies that focus on genetics. Maybe that are even injected into the fluid-containing space around the spinal cord that'll help reduce pain.
That's an interesting one. But you know, how many times, though, are you, as you work with your patients, is it also not related to just lifestyle and diet?
Well, I mean, I think the lifestyle and diet unfortunately change when patients develop chronic pain, and a lot of it results from the fact that they just don't move as much anymore. I mean, they're more bedridden or they're more couch-ridden, and they, as a result, I think, tend not to focus on a healthy diet and focus on exercise and spirituality even. You know, I mean, those things sort of, I think, go by the wayside.
Paul, in your practice, do you find that you're treating youth and children every bit as much as those of us that are in the over 50 crowd not wanting to believe we're getting older?
Most patients that I see are probably, I would say, 40 years of age and over. There are some, I mean, children typically don't have chronic pain. I mean, this particular syndrome that I mentioned called complex regional pain syndrome has affected and does affect younger kids, maybe 11, 12, 13 years of age, but for the most part, most of the pain that I see and that I treat is in people who are over 40.
And for that reason, I mean, just to think that you've, again, a focused practice, you've been part of these centers at Johns Hopkins, you know, communities and professional associations in the whole space. Is this whole field of pain management thus, you know, on an upswing? And if so, is it related to more than the fact that we've got more of us aging in the baby boomer sector?
Well, it is very much on the upswing. I think that many, at least in the United States, I mean, hospital systems, the healthcare systems have recognized now that pain needs to be treated. It needs to be treated when we're in the hospital if we suffer from pain, to the extent that it's now a fifth vital sign. So it needs to be assessed and it needs to be treated by specialists. Why? Because we've learned through research and investigations that if acute pain does not go away and simply develops to, well, basically, if acute pain persists, we're at risk for developing chronic pain. And once you develop chronic pain, although it is treatable and we can, you know, there are effective therapies for it, it's hard to eliminate completely. So I think that there's a realization now among the healthcare community that treating acute pain is important to help forestall the development of persistent pain.
You know, I think one of the challenges we have, though, is we don't yet have a language developed around this. I mean, I can recall the number of times I might have been seeking medical care and you'd have the professional ask you, so on a scale of 1 to 10, tell me where your pain is. And you're thinking, now, this is subjective. You know, I mean, what do you mean a scale of 1 to 10? That's all about me. So do you see in your field now some more objective ways to measure it so those of you in the process can really head it off at the pass?
Well, mostly pain is still evaluated subjectively. It's a very personal experience, and we do use numbers, as you mentioned, or sometimes faces for kids, other types of scales that are used to help us determine whether how much pain a person is in. And we don't yet have a more objective method of doing that. I wish we did. I wish we could sort of place something, you know, like a little ruler or something on someone's forehead, and then it would automatically say, gosh, you know, this person has a 10 out of a 10 pain or a 5 out of a 10 pain. But we still really rely on a person's response to us and description. And, you know, pain is really, it's such a multidimensional experience. It's not just anatomical or physiological. It really is more, it's psychological, it's spiritual, and emotional. And it's those elements, I think, that we're grasping better now than we did in the past. And that, gosh, you know, we have nerve blocks and we have stimulators and medicines, but we really also need to address the emotional impact of having pain. And that really, I think, can be enormously helpful and beneficial.
So, Paul, do you find in your practice then, as you help people cope, or not just cope, but get beyond the chronic pain, that you're touching into the other disciplines of psychology and needing to tap in other professionals in your community to help?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I mean, for example, I work with psychologists and psychiatrists who are invaluable mm-hmm. in seeing patients who have chronic pain to help them reframe what has gone on in their life and to realize that this particular event has occurred, but it doesn't have to change your life completely. And these are the techniques, these are the ways that you could help restore some of what you once had. It may not be exactly what you had, but let's search for other avenues and ways of improving the quality of your life.
So really, this practice of pain management, just as you say, it's a multidimensional experience. It might be fair to say it's one of the few cross-functional medical specialties now that's requiring that cross-discipline work, right?
I think that's a great interpretation of what it is now. It does cross into anesthesiology, it crosses into physical medicine, rehab, psychiatry, psychology, radiology, surgery even, because we implant devices like spinal cord stimulators or even pain pumps.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, Paul, for you personally, then, you're a trained anesthesiologist, and then by association with all your colleagues, you're learning all these other areas. How is it you're staying contemporary in your field if this is one that's continuing to change and shift?
Well, I'm fortunate in the sense that I'm in academic practice at Johns Hopkins, mm-hmm. and I'm involved in research studies and investigations and how we can help better understand and reduce certain types of pain. I'm teaching, and as a result of having to teach what I do, I try to keep abreast of the literature. And
well, you can't help but be kept honest by students, right?
That's right.
That's many times you become the student as opposed to them being the teacher. You mentioned research studies. I know, of course, Johns Hopkins is so well regarded in so many fields. Can you share with us, a contemporary research study underway that perhaps has really taken your breath away, saying, "Whoa, we had no idea," a major aha that you're grappling with right now?
Well, I have one of my sub-interests is in an area called, it's a syndrome called thoracic outlet syndrome. It's essentially a pain syndrome that it can affect the neck and the arm, and it can cause disabling pain in those areas, often from whiplash injuries and things that you would think ordinarily would be innocuous, like a small motor vehicle accident mm-hmm. or repetitive typing, for example, which a lot of us do now on the computer. And what's intriguing about this particular, about treatments for this, is that I've been investigating the use of botulinum toxin, or Botox, into a small little muscle in the neck that has shown to be quite effective in reducing this type of pain and may indeed, in time, help certain patients avoid surgery.
So I think that I would imagine as well in your practice, the idea of, just as much as some of us brace when our doctors suggest we take a pill, the same goes for when there's suggestion of surgery, if there couldn't be another way to avoid that disruptive process.
I think so. I mean, that isn't to say that surgery isn't important, and it is, and I'm glad it's available for us, because it's certainly needed. At the same time, surgery can lead to the development of chronic pain. So I think if there are more benign avenues or, less invasive avenues for the treatment of pain, then that would be my first choice.
Very good. Well, before we run out of time, I do want to, of course, acknowledge that you, like me, have enjoyed this opportunity of kind of branching out and using some of our other skills and being live on the radio frequently. Your show, Aches and Gains, I know you launched in January. How's it been going? What's been the learnings for you there so far?
Well, it's been fantastic, and thank you for bringing that up. I've felt for a long time that pain needs to have a greater voice.
Yes.
And as a result,
as opposed to screaming in pain.
That's right.
Pun intended there.
Well, so I created and I host this radio show on WVAL Radio out of Baltimore, and I since January, and the show has been quite successful. I mean, there are about 50,000 listeners per month, and in the time slot that it's in on Saturdays at 8 p.m., it even goes up to Boston and to Bermuda. I've had intriguing guests, and my goal, though, in doing this, to be honest, Zara, is to number one, generate awareness, and number two, hope. Hope that, yeah, you know, there are treatments for pain, and here are people who can share their story with you in term and how they reduce their pain. And some of these people are my patients, some are not, some are subspecialists in pain, and others are well-known individuals like Peggy Fleming, like Naomi Judd, for example, mm-hmm, like Montel Williams.
Exactly. And, you know, everybody's got a story to tell, and that opportunity, just like you're sharing your story with us today, is a great way to impart knowledge. I like your characterization, though, this is about hope, because not everybody knows it, you know, and there aren't very many one-place shops you can go for knowledge and for opportunities. So to get this opportunity to crisscross so many people, fields, and disciplines, I'm sure that benefits your listeners tremendously.
I think so, and that's my great hope and expectation with respect to the show.
Well, and also, you know, just a comment. So here's someone like yourself who's spent so many years honing your medical skills. I know you went off and got a business degree, and then also now playing around in the media at the same time. So tell me, how is it do you think you've changed the most in this process of guiding others through their own change journey?
Great question. I feel like the depth of my... I think empathy, frankly, has increased over time for people in pain. I mean, I think that I think I'm a better listener, I'm a better physician, a better care provider, if you will, because of the experiences that I've had, because of whom I've met, and the feedback that I've received from patients and from others that I've talked to on the radio show. So I think it's helped me grow personally and emotionally, and I think has allowed me to be more receptive to other people.
I would also offer that the more that we sit in this chair of interviewing others, it also teaches us a tremendous power of listening before we go dive in with the next question, right?
Absolutely.
Terrific. Well, Paul Christou, thank you so very much. And for our listeners, Paul Christou, who is with the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, the Division of Pain Medicine, and also his show Aches and Gains, broadcast out of Baltimore. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you very much, Sarah.
You bet. Terrific.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.